dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source codes, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
We are back once again with you this week, ladies and gentlemen, for Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 184. Why am I using my normal, everyday, over-the-terrestrial radio voice like the morning shows? I don't know, I just felt like doing it, I don't know. Why do I do anything? I've given up trying to figure it out. And so is this week's co-host, Booter, joining us this week.
Hello, everybody.
I think he gave up trying to figure me out a long time ago. Today is January 30th, 2007. Again, episode 184. Boy, man, we are fast approaching episode number 200. And we're not going to talk about that, but we kind of got some possible plans for that episode, right?
Yes, we do.
I think you came up with some of the plans for that episode, so we're going to keep the lid on that one for a little while. Maybe I should do my terrestrial radio announcer voice. We should do a whole themed episode where we're like, the morning zoo, we're wacky and zany.
Or we could do a whole show like Howard Cosell, and then everybody would just fucking stab themselves in the ear with an ice pick.
Oh, they already do. Come on, who are you kidding? Well, one thing, I tell you what, I've made a change. 184 episodes, and I've never broken this pattern. I know this is a funny, bizarre, but absolutely truthful statement. Every episode of BinRev Radio I've done, I'm breaking a pattern today. I do not have my glass of sweet iced tea to do the show today. Instead of sweet iced tea, for some reason, this past weekend, a couple days ago, I got a wild hair up my ass. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I am doing the show with a nice cold glass of cherry Kool-Aid.
But it's better than a glass of Ensure, I guess.
A glass of what?
Ensure.
Oh, gross. Why? Ooh. That's like liquid vomit. Why would anybody drink that stuff? It's like all... Ugh, it's like drinking curdled milk or something. I would never slim fast or any of that stuff. Anything that says protein shake just sounds nasty anyway.
Have you ever tried that Airborne?
What is it? What is that, like baby?
It's Airborne. It's, I guess when you're getting sick or whatever, you don't want anybody else. You put it in ice water, and like there's different flavors, but I tried the citrus one. My girl was getting sick, so I took one sip of it and just poured the glass out. I mean, it's really disgusting, but it works, and it keeps others from getting sick, though.
Hmm. At first, I thought you were talking about, like, baby formula or some shit, like we're sitting around drinking Similac. Welcome to BinRev Radio. We're drinking Similac. Nope, not that quite this week. So, you'll have to forgive me a little bit this week. I got to admit, I'm a little bit slap-happy, punch-drunk, whatever you want to call it, sleep-deprived, because I had a pretty big weekend. For those of you who don't know, we did a tremendous server move over the weekend. So, as far as show and tell, it's going to take up a little time because I thought I'd actually finally go into a little bit of detail. We've chatted about it here and there and in the forums. We've mentioned that it was going to happen, but I haven't actually had any time to get together. Booter's coughing up lung butter on the show there.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I'm not feeling too well myself, so...
It's been really cold down here in Houston, especially for... I get pissed off when it gets below 55.
Listen, here, right here, I don't know if this microphone will pick this up, but right there is a nice little bucket just in case I decide to hurl on the show Don't know what's going around, but like everybody seems to be sick. But if I vomit on the show, you can rest assured that I will do it right in front of the microphone, and it will be a part of the show.
And it will be cut into some sort of remix.
Exactly. Oh, man. But we're going to try to make it through it without that, hopefully. A little bit of cherry Kool-Aid helps everything stay down, I hope. But yeah, the server moved. So here's what's going on. And I'm going to try to keep it short, but I want to give a little bit of detail so people realize what all we've been going through here these last few days. First of all, we've been mentioning for a couple months now, and people have known for 3 or 4 months now, that the server's been just ridiculously slow, just horribly slow. And I don't want to go into too much detail on the backstory of that because we've already talked about it somewhat. But all I can say, trust me when I say that we basically outgrew the box. And it was slow. It was getting slower gradually. And finally, it did come to a head where finally the server just could not keep up with the load that was on it. So whenever the server would get a rush of people in the peak times, we'd have so many people on there that it wasn't able to keep up with all the requests. It was basically all the PHP requests to MySQL for the forums and whatnot. We're just overloading it, getting it confused. We're running out of memory. Wow, that was a velch right there. I just had a velch on the air. I know that's not as good as a vomit, but man, it tasted better the first time going down. We had a lot of load on the server, and we tried to reconfigure it for a few weeks there where we were trying to still make do with what we had. That was the problem. It wasn't like we were completely incompetent. The problem was we're trying to squeeze every last bit of performance out of that server because we couldn't really afford to go much more than that. So, obviously, we finally did have to break down, and that's why I posted that whole comment about our money situation. And once again, no, we're not doing the off-the-hook begathon, so don't worry. But it just pretty much told us that, yes, we've outgrown it. We have to make a decision of what we're going to do. We threw some more memory at the problem to solve it temporarily, but it was obviously that's not going to last longer either, so we had to switch to a new server. Well, that was only really one of the reasons, to be quite honest. One reason to switch to the new server was because we simply need more power. So that's one reason. The other reason, and of course that was the primary reason. The secondary reason, or I shouldn't say, actually, I guess that's a misnomer. It's not a reason, per se. It was a bonus. Another reason to move the server, one thing we would look for in a new server was we simply don't have the time. We had too many people working on it, and I don't know how to say this any better, but my time's more valuable than the time I had to spend constantly trying to tweak a little fractional percentage of performance out of the server. I don't get any time to hack anymore. I don't get any time to research and write stuff anymore, so that was really frustrating to me. Plus, I'm bringing a lot of other people who are putting their time in it, and all of our time is more valuable than that. So, when we started looking around for new servers, we had to find one, or we chose to find one, that was going to have some level of management to it, so that we don't have to be the ones constantly up all night when a problem occurs. Now, those are usually few and far between, hopefully, but realistically speaking, it just helps to take that load off of me having to worry about problems all the time. I can just go to somebody else who we're paying for management and say, hey, fix this for us. So that's going to go a long way into A, getting things done faster, and B, freeing up a lot of our time so that we can start working on other things. So those are two big things that we're going to get out of this server move. Well, now here's the funny part of the story, and this is, I guess, my incompetence. The way this story starts is we'd searched around to try to find some different companies, right? And Booter and I have talked about different companies, and all the moderating team, all the DDP members, people outside, we had a lot of people giving us information about other companies and other options. So we've been researching that for the last month or so. Finally went with a company. And what I was going to do was go ahead and buy the new box, new server from a new company, as described earlier, fully managed, a more powerful box, more memory, more bandwidth, faster processor, all the above. And what I was going to do was take my time and slowly move the sites over one by one. I was going to start with some of the smaller sites. I was going to start with stankdog.com, start with digitaldogpound.org, the Hack TV, move them over one at a time slowly so that I could be in control of the whole thing. We could do it nice and smooth. We wouldn't have any problems. We would minimize downtime. And then when it was comes time to do BINREV, the biggest site, we would get together and spend the weekend and try to get it done as quickly as possible and get it moved over to keep, minimize the downtime. And we would give people a warning before that happened. I like to think that we've done pretty good at communicating anytime we're going to do server changes, moves, upgrades, etc., and let people know ahead of time so they don't wonder what the hell happened.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't exactly happen this time, now did it?
Well, I mean, it was kind of weird with some of the DNS issues, like when the move was going, because I remember I called you, I was like, are you doing the move now? And you were like, no, I was like, well, BINREV went down. That was, just this past weekend.
Yeah, that was, I think that was actually Friday. No, wait a minute. Was it Friday? I think it was Friday. I think it was Friday you called me.
Yeah, because when I got home Friday from work at 3:30, I checked it. I checked the site. It was up.
Yep.
About an hour later, about 4:30 my time, I checked it, and it was down. And that's when I called you, and you were, like, just getting home from work.
Yep.
And, then what was it, the next day or whatever, you know, it was back up. But
well,
some people, like in IRC, I was talking, some people still can access the site.
Right.
And,
right.
Like, you know, what was it? You called me or I called you or whatever, and you're like, is the site up? And I was like, yeah, it's been up all morning for me since I got up. But, I mean, you
well,
know, you're on the East Coast, but I was talking to people on the West Coast, and they couldn't access it either. But
right, but let's back up. That was the second part of the problem. So let's back up a little bit. The first part was Friday. Again, Friday, I had gotten a server. I think it was on a Tuesday I had ordered the server, and it was ready and available for us Wednesday, which, first of all, was pretty fast turnaround time. I was impressed with that. So Wednesday, Nick 84 and I chatted a little bit, and we talked about how should we do this, and I said to him, let me just move over one of the small sites for right now, and kind of laid out the plan like I described earlier. Let's move some small sites, make sure they work okay, and then work with some of the other people who we host their sites and things like that, and BINREV, etc. So that was the plan. So Thursday night, we poked around the new box to see how it was set up, see what was there, what wasn't, et cetera, tweak it a little bit. And then Friday, kind of around lunchtime, I went out there, and first thing I have to do is we run our own name servers. And we're going to get into some more detail about the, generally speaking, some of these things later, but I'm going to stick with the housekeeping in our particular story. I went out there and I had to add a couple new name servers because the name servers that we're using on the new box were going to be a little different than the ones on the old box. Well, our registrar, which is, I don't want to talk about it on the air because they listened to the radio show, and last time I mentioned them, they went and started fucking with me, so we'll leave that alone. And they'll probably still fuck with me again, but, you know, they can rot in hell, bastards, especially after what they did to Fyodor this weekend. But anyway, I'll back off of that. Long story short, I went out there and they suck. Nameless company sucks. And they would not let me add the name servers correctly. Actually, that's a lie. They let me add them. But what it did was, for some reason, somehow, it deleted the old name servers out of there. So all of a sudden, adding those two new name servers to BINREV somehow deleted or corrupted the old name servers, even though I didn't tell it to change them. I'm only adding two new ones to register them as name servers. And when you run your own, you have to register your own name servers. That's all I was doing. I wasn't actually changing the name servers to BINREV.com, but somehow they got corrupted. And I called tech support for a nameless company, and needless to say, it was fucking utterly worthless. I have never seen a bigger bunch of morons in all my life. I've never gotten any kind of valid support from nameless company. This is starting to get kind of funny.
I just recently registered a couple domains with?
Probably, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very big company.
Okay.
I think it's pretty obvious who we're talking about, but we're not going to say it by name. And basically, their interface sucks. The way they do things sucks. Their tech support sucks. And they end up having to elevate a ticket to someone else that was going to take 24 to 48 hours to get back to me. So you know what? I said, fuck it. So it wasn't at the time. It was about noon. It was lunchtime. I made some changes. Everything was fine and working. And I was literally driving home from work. So it was about 5:30, I think. You said, I think it was 4:30 your time.
Yeah.
5:30 my time. I was driving home from work. And Booter calls to tell me the site's down, and I'm like, well, it was just up at work a little while back, but I'm on my way home. I get home, sure as shit, it's down. Like, what the fuck happened to this? And that's when I called GoDaddy and... Oh, excuse me, nameless nameless company. which is not, in fact, GoDaddy, but... It's kind of sort of... Anyway, whatever. Owned. All right, we'll leave that in there, too.
It rhymes with Yo them. Poppy.
Yeah, I'll leave... it actually is not them. However, it's it is them, but... That's a whole nother story for another time. I'm inside their database and eating their tubes or something. But I called them up again, no help with them. They opened a ticket, yada yada. So at that point, BenRev was down. I called Verbo. Verbo was helpful on the phone, walking through some DNS stuff. Teoxy and IRC were chatting some DNS stuff. Actually, that was actually the next day, Teoxy and I, something else. But anyway, everybody helped out a little bit. We figured out what we needed to do to fix it. And the long story short, it takes a while for the DNS changes to happen anyway. So on the fly Friday, I said, you know what? Instead of going through this hassle of trying to fix this and get it set up and running, we've got the new box. We were going to test doing one move anyway. As long as the box is going to be down for 24 to 48 hours anyway, let's go ahead and just start the move of everything. So I pretty much, luckily, Nick was available, was online. We were chatting, so we went ahead and started the process between the two of us. Started moving sites over there, changing all the name servers, yada, yada, yada. And everything went fairly smoothly, I have to say. There were a few little hiccups, a few little bumps along the way, and there are still a few ongoing problems. But all in all, it went pretty well. So that's what I said earlier. It was my screw-up, my fuck-up. I messed up the name servers, and that's what triggered the whole thing. Again, otherwise we would have given some notification of what was going on. So I know people in IRC were all like, you know, OMG owned. They thought we were busted or whatever was going on. So, yeah, that's the reason that it happened so suddenly like that. And once we were in it and committed, I had to say, you know, here we go. I stayed up late into the night moving stuff over to the new box. Any problems we had along the way, I was opening up tickets with our new hosting company because, as I said, we went with a managed solution. So some things I sicked them on and made them work on fixing when I went to bed, and then emailed Nick with some other things and said, hey, can you look into this? When I got up the next morning, Nick had finished BenRev, had it up and running for some people, like you said earlier. This is what you were alluding to in the story earlier. Some people it was working and some people it was not. And the reason for that was, again, name servers. However, it was name servers on the new box, and the name servers that I had registered with unnamed company here. Is that still funny if I say it, even though I've already dropped the docs? That's pretty much I screwed up and put in the wrong IP address. So that second part of that story was kind of my fault. Well, the whole story's my fault, let's be honest. The whole story's all my fault.
I bet you the new host was thrilled. He's all like, wait, hold on. This guy, like, just got a new server, and he's already fucked shit up and wants us to fix it? What's the matter with this guy?
Well, and actually, we're gonna segue into the main topic here in a few minutes, but one of the things that we did, and I'm going to allude to later on, was due to the content of our server, that is, it being a bunch of hacking sites.
Yeah.
I'm very careful, and I'm very upfront with every company that I've dealt with. When I negotiate with them and try to contact them, I always tell them what the site is. Sometimes I'll invite them to go take a look. Feel free to ask any questions, because sometimes that can be a problem. So I had already communicated several times and let them know up front what the story was, what the situations was, what our expectations were from them, what will you do, what won't you do under the management, et cetera, et cetera. And these are all questions that you have to ask. I'd already cleared that up. We'll come back to that in the main topic coming up in a second, but we'd already cleared with them that they were willing to help move things. They were willing to help set certain things up. So we'd already set the stage.
Try to remind me when we go into that a little bit later on. I'll try my best to remember.
Yeah. All right. We will actually segue pretty much into that now, unless you have any housekeeping you want to get out up front.
I've just been really busy with work. I mean, you know some of the stuff about that I've been going through at work, so...
Yeah, you've got lots of good training and stuff going on, and cougar hunting or something like that.
Reverse cougar hunting.
Excuse me, reverse cougar hunting.
I forgot to mention on 175, like, Ratchet mentioned, so it's like MILF hunting, and then, like, after we went actually listened to the show, I was like, well, it's actually different, because MILF hunting is where you go looking specifically for the older women. They're not looking for you. Reverse cougar hunting is where you go to where the older women are looking for young guys. You just put yourself in a situation to be, quote unquote, caught by the cougar.
That's just, I don't know, something sounds a little, I don't know about that one.
Hey, I landed one. She'll be 34 in a couple months.
Oh, now see, why is 34, I'm older than that. Come on now.
Well,
I'm old.
Fans, sweetheart.
Gee, thanks for calling me old. I guess I have to go find some, well, how come the chicks don't do that, though? How come I never find young chicks putting themselves out there wanting to be caught by me?
Well, you can. You just got to drive by the high school about 2:30.
Yeah, I think I might get thrown in the clink for that one. I mean, look what happened to Ratchet. I mean, I'm sorry. Remind me to edit that out, will you?
Okay.
Yeah, we'll take that out later. Anyway, yeah. So, again, due to the server problems, we pretty much had no email, or if we did, I haven't seen it yet because, A, I didn't upload last week's episode until, I think, Sunday night. So my apologies for that, but I should have spilled out the podcast by now. And as well as that, even if somebody did send email in the last couple of days since it did go out Sunday, that is one of the few casualties that we had is we're having some email problems. So anything binrev.com is hit and miss. We haven't quite isolated what it is yet, but working on it. So bear with us through that part of it, but we wanted to make sure the forums and stuff were back up first, so Nick did a great job on that.
Has the stream been down too?
What's that?
The stream?
Yeah, the radio stream's down. That's another one of the casualties. Again, we had to, you know, it's one of those things where we have to prioritize and get the most important things back up and running and settled out. So that we are working on that one. One other thing that we had problems with but we did fix right away was Will Hack for Food.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a good. Let me bring this up too while we're in housekeeping. This is one of the great things about doing all this stuff, moving to the new server and having it managed, is it frees up some time for us to work on stuff. It's already begun. I mean, just the process of moving it over there, we know we're going to be on the new server. Any little bugs and problems we've had on it in the past, Nick has worked on, and we had some going on there with the move. We got that back up and running, tested, and willhackforfood.biz is back up and running right now. Works wonderfully. I tested it start to finish. Works beautifully. I love that site. I still think that's one of my favorite sites. It's so awesome, so easy to use, clean, simple interface, great site. And we're going to kind of relaunch that here soon. I guess I'll come up with more information on that in the next week or two, because it's not a lot of work that needs to be done, but a little bit. But Will Hack for Food is kind of a long, bulky address, so we're working on that, coming up with a new solution that'll make it a little bit easier and faster to not have to type that in, not have to have the word hack in the URL, which is kind of interesting, not using a .viz, which is very spam-unfriendly, because a lot of spammers use .viz. So we'd look for a relaunch of Will Hack for Food coming very soon. And we were able to do that because, yeah, while we're in the process of this, we're like, listen, we know that the load is being taken off of us as far as sysadmin side of things and system-level stuff, so we're able to start working on these things again. So that is back up and running for anybody who wants to use it. That is a disposable email service where you can go in there and create a quick throwaway account, receive-only email right now, and probably stay that way. But it's password protected. In a very simple way, nothing fancy, but you get a password to protect it so nobody backdoors into it. So we've gone on, talked about that on the show before, and I've presented on that at places, so we won't rehash that. But we will segue into the main topic, which is exactly what we've been talking about here, except we're going to back up on a larger scale and talk about hosting in general. And I guess we'll say hacker-friendly hosting is probably what we'll title the show or something, but talk about some things about hosting, because I know a lot of our listeners have several sites. They know all about hosting, and some of this might be repetitive stuff. Some of it might not be. I don't know. So we're going to cover a lot of different things, drop some numbers, some prices, so people get some ideas, because if you haven't done the research, you might not even know what you're getting into with that kind of stuff. Talk about some of the hardware, software, some of the other options that you have with it, some of the content limits, some other issues and problems along the way, how you handle it. So that's going to be our main topic. And basically start off with, well, let's back up a little bit. First of all, there's different types of hosting. And the
most... I think before we go into this, can we pause for just a second?
Sure.
You may want to timestamp this.
Mm-hmm.
I have to urinate.
Well, I tell you what. Why don't you go urinate, and I'll just keep talking, because I don't like to stop and edit shit back together.
Okay.
You can take the phone with you and urinate on the
show. This can make a great outtake for an upcoming show.
It's not going to be an outtake. This is going right in the show. I'm not taking this out.
Well, then hold on, because I don't think everybody wants to hear me pee.
I don't know. We're going to vomit on the show. We might as well pee on the show. Oh, man.
You want me to do it seriously?
No, just go pee and be quiet.
Okay.
Oh, man. All right, while Booter pees, I'm going to go on into the main topic and talk about, let's start with, the bottom of the barrel hosting. When you talk about hosting, let's talk about free hosting, because I know a lot of people are listening. They don't have the money to go out there and pay for hosting, so they're looking for free solutions. And you can get free hosting all over the global interweb, all over. It's not hard to find. If you just go out there and do a little bit of searching, you'll find all kinds of it. Now, depending on what your needs are and what you want to do with it, et cetera, if you want something that's going to be already set up for you, they're going to give you a lot of GUI interfaces and stuff like that, go with one of the big free hosting sites like GeoCities, for example. I got to admit, I don't know a whole lot of these off the top of my head, because I don't really, they don't give you much for it. They're limited so much. I think Blogger, isn't that one that's free? I don't know if Booter's done peeing yet or not.
Well, I'm not sure about Blogger, but isn't 100, like 100MB.com another one?
Yeah, that sounds familiar. And again, there's so many. But I'm thinking more like from the big providers, like from GeoCities and stuff like that. They provide you an interface. They provide you templates. Google Pages, right? Isn't Google Pages free?
I've never used Google Pages before.
Is it called Google Pages?
I can take a look real quick.
You know, me and Google, we're not all that on speaking terms and whatnot. But,
there's the late Angel Fire.
Is Angel Fire still around?
I think so, actually.
But yeah, so the big ones like that, those big companies that are offering free hosting, they want you on their sites because, A, they are feeding ads to all of those sites, so any hits that you get are hits on their ads and they can make money. So that's why they offer those. That's their ulterior motive. And
it's
to them, it's not a big deal.
Pages.google.com.
Pages.google.com, there you go. To them, it's not a big deal to give you a little bit of disk space and a little bit of whatever. If they're making some money off of it, you're getting content, they're tracking everything you do. Keep that in mind. I don't want to go into a conspiracy thing on this episode. But there's lots of free hosting from the big companies like that where they give you templates. But the thing you get, look, as a matter of fact, I guess I have to throw this out there. MySpace, isn't that, I guess we have to say that too, right? Yeah, I know. But you know what? They give you templates, and that's exactly what I was getting ready to say that made me think of it. You get in a situation where every page looks the freaking same.
Yeah.
So you don't get a whole lot of originality. You're not running any extra software. You're limited to what they give you access to. They may give you some neat tools and everything, but you're always going to have some sort of limitations on it.
That's when, the very first thing I ever got, back in 99 or something, I just basically wanted to teach myself some HTML, because I didn't know shit about it. I was really just starting to get into computers after a five-year hiatus and shit. And I went through GeoCities, and, you know, they have the WYSIWYG that you can, or not WYSIWYG, the GUI that you could use. But I was like, no, I want to teach myself the code. So I went straight into the editor, and once you go into the editor, you can't go back to the easy GUI, you know, point and click and everything. And that's what I did. I just wrote shit, looked at the code, broke it, and keep writing it. You know, basically just reverse engineering it until I taught myself, you know, the HTML. And that's what I love about GeoCities, is because you can use that HTML editor. And at the time, back in 99, 2000, I think they were one of the few that actually did that, that let you write your own HTML code.
Yeah, and you know, actually, it wasn't until early 2000s, to be honest with you, that I actually started using some of the other HTML editing software packages myself. I still use good old-fashioned Notepad, or actually more to the point, Edit Plus or TextEdit or some of those editors. I was using those even as recently as the 2000s. So
yeah, I mean, when I was doing support for Yahoo a couple of years ago or whatever, I was really surprised, because we get a lot of the idiots that, you know, download the program and they just use that Yahoo provided. And there was one person I got, and I was like, you know, something was wrong on his page. A link was broken or something wasn't showing up or something. And I was like, well, let me look at your code. This is outside the scope of our support, but let me look at it. And I was like, you know, how did you build your website? And he said, I wrote it in Notepad. And I was like, whoa, holy shit, this is like the first person I've ever had that actually hand-coded their site. And so, you know, I went through his source, and yeah, he had just like something very small, missed a bracket or something in HTML. And I pointed it out to him, showed him exactly where in the source it was, and he fixed that. I think one of the things that he had wrong, too, besides just a bracket, was he put a space in, and Yahoo uses Unix-based servers, and so, of course, you can't have spaces, so it was something very minor like that.
Right. Well, and that's when, you know, if you're going to do anything outside of using their little GUI editor that they already give you and a bunch of widgets and stuff that they provide for you, and if you want to add a counter, copy and paste this code onto your page, that kind of thing, then you want to move up a little bit to one of the other free providers. And I think that's where you're talking about that 100 meg, 1,000 meg, whatever that site is, free pages.
Yeah.
I remember Tripod back in the day, but they were like GeoCities and stuff. But there are a lot of other free hosting. Some of them out there by different content management places where I think, for example, Envision Board, don't they offer free Envision Board? They're very limited, but it comes with the Envision Forum software where you can have only up to 50 or 100 or something registered users and stuff like that, and they'll host it for free. I'm not sure if they still do that or not.
There is one free Envision Board that I go on where I think they have a couple thousand. I don't know what restrictions they have on there other than that. I mean, the way they have it set up is there's not near as much as functionality as on the BenRep forums.
Yeah,
but
they'll give you limited ones. So, like, some of the content management systems will offer you free hosting. So that's another option. But normally, again, you're still limited to whatever they want to give you. They're going to be feeding ads or something on there to make it worth their while to have you on there. It's usually advertising-based. Or, you know, I think in the early days there were some places that they were trying to copyright any content you put on it. The copyright shifted to them as the owner of the sites.
Yeah.
Now that's pretty much, I haven't heard any stories about that recently. But anyway, the next step up from that would be to go for some sort of paid hosting. Now, Ben Booter, I'm sure you know as well as I, you can get hosting even for $1, $2, $3 a month.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about anything from, like, let's say the $5 to $10, anything less than $10. And what you're getting with that is you're getting what's commonly referred to as shared hosting.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, do you want to kind of explain what the concept of what shared hosting is and how that's generally set up and why they're able to charge such low prices for it?
Well, shared hosting, basically, you're basically on a VPS, which is, I mean, there's going to be a physical box somewhere. And somebody owns that box, whether it's a reseller or, you know, like a big company, like, you know, just give Yahoo, for example, because that's how all their shit is based, is on VPSs. But basically, yeah, you're on a box shared with probably hundreds of people, you know, depending on
thousands,
you know, on what your needs are. Yeah, or thousands. And, you know, they got the hardware in there, and say, you know, just for easy numbers' sake, say they got a 500-gig hard drive in there with 2 gigs of RAM and, I don't know, 2 terabytes or 3 terabytes a month. Bandwidth. They're going to partition you out when you sign up for it. They're going to partition you out, say, okay, we're going to give you, for $10 a month, we're going to give you 10 gigs. And, you know, the RAM issue, for the most part, they never bring up. But
yeah, it's kind of hard to slice off a partition, a section of RAM for you in that scenario.
Yeah.
But usually what they'll do is put a rule that says if you start eating up too much of the RAM, you know, they have the right to shut you down or something like that, or kill your processes and things like that. So if you outgrow that type of hosting or service, they will put a stop to it once it crosses their line.
Yeah. And, like, you know, they'll also partition you out some bandwidth. So, like, say they'll give you, for $10 a month, what's a good number, maybe 20 gigs, maybe 30 gigs of bandwidth a month. You know, on the low end for, like, you know, a low-end server, you know. Or a VPS. And so, I mean, yeah, that's what you're going to pay. But, I mean, you go on the higher end and, you know, you're getting, 100 gigs of storage. And you're going to get, like, say, maybe 500 gigs of transfer a month.
Yeah,
and
something.
You may be paying $50 to $60.
Well, and that's just it. It's going to vary. And that's kind of where we were going with this is, it can start off as little as $5 a month. Like that one that I always liked and that several of us have used, dual use for a long time, was PowWeb. And I don't want to single anymore out. Because I don't want to endorse any, especially when we get to these higher end boxes. I don't want to endorse anybody. Because no one's really, if somebody were to give us the hookup, which they've never done, then maybe we'd talk differently, but I'd sell out. But since they haven't, I will mention PowerWeb, though, because we had good luck with that in the past. Old School Freak ran off of PowerWeb for the longest time. For, I think it's $7.77 a month. And you get a lot for that $7.77. But basically, you're starting off in that end, and you can go as high as $10 to $15, $20, $30, $40, $50, even higher, under a, quote, shared hosting environment. You're still sharing resources, you're just getting more of them. So for the step up from 5 to 10 to 20, each step is a little bit more disk space, a little bit more bandwidth, a little bit more access and functionality, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why, again, you can go out and do tons of searches, and there are tons, literally bajillions and gazillions of interweb sites comparing this and listing them and reviewing them and stuff like that. And you can compare them side by side. This one, you know, another thing that they may limit you on the low-end accounts is you can only have 50 email addresses, and when you upgrade to the next one, you might get 100. So functionality may be limited. On the low-end ones, you may only get one database that you can use. But on the higher end ones, you're allowed 5, 10, maybe even unlimited number of databases that you can create.
Well, I think we should also mention, too, that because you are being shared on the same server with hundreds or potentially thousands of other people, you're also subject to what those users basically do with the box.
That's the drawback.
Before in the past, we had a situation where somebody used their 75 gigs of data transfer within 3 hours, and it pretty much melted the box, and it took down hundreds of other sites just due to bandwidth issues.
And that's why you research these things, because they are a mixed bag. You never know what you're going to get. Most people that are getting those shared hosting are people who just want a private site, a place to put their resume, a place to tinker and learn HTML, or just play with some software for the first time. They're not usually, or they shouldn't really be using that for any kind of realistic hosting of any kind.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, and that person, I'm sure, had his account canceled subsequently because he had used over what they had allocated him or expected him to use. It's kind of hard to enforce how much CPU or memory you can use because it's not really easy to cap, but if you cross that line, then, yeah, they'll cancel you.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful. So, again, we say this all the time on the show, have backups of everything, but I digress. So that's a shared hosting environment, and again, they can put hundreds, literally thousands on a box, or in Yahoo's case, we'll use earlier, millions on a box. But of course, it's not one box, it's multiple server farms when you get to that level. But realistically, you can take one very high-end P4 dual core, I don't know, 3-4 gigahertz, whatever they're up to these days, a couple gigs of RAM, and you can easily host hundreds of sites on that, thousands if they're small sites like I described earlier, on one machine. So you pay how much money does it cost for one machine and start shaving that down at $10 a pop. Yeah, that machine paid for itself and then some. That's how web hosting companies make their money.
We have a lot of people like where I work. No, we have a lot of people that do that exact same thing.
And that's kind of the next step I think we should talk about here is going from getting free hosting or single hosting, shared hosting for yourself. The next step up is reseller, being a reseller yourself. You're getting a dedicated server of your own. You're not sharing it with anybody else. You're getting a reseller. Actually, I guess it's kind of a misnomer. You can get a reseller account that's still shared. So I guess I should say that. You can get hundreds or even thousands on one box. Or you can create 2 or 3, 4 or 5 resellers on the same box and allow them to resell the bandwidth that they've been allocated to even smaller sites.
Yeah, I mean, but most we have customers that, you know, they'll buy a box and then basically they divide it directly in half. They cut the box in half.
And have 2 resellers on it.
And then, yeah, they resell each half of the box for almost of what they're paying total for the box. So then those 2 people, yeah, they're making almost double the money just on that server.
And it's possible and it happens sometimes, but that's pretty rare to me because what I normally see is they're not going to be able to compete with the person they're reselling from for the shared hosting. So that's not quite so common. What's more common is what the run I started to say is where you get a full dedicated server of your own. So you get that Pentium 4 with all the RAM and all the stuff that that you want to set up on it. And we're going to go into some details about those in a second, too. And you have that whole box, and it's yours to control and maintain and keep up. And you resell to hundreds or thousands of smaller sites, and you make money. You're paying for your server, you're paying for your bandwidth, you're getting it usually at somewhat of a discount, and the more you resell, just like any other reseller or pyramid scheme, the more you resell, the more people you stuff on those boxes, the more money you make and the more profit you make, because then you subsequently pay off whatever your bill is and everything left is profit.
Yeah, and I think we should also mention, if anybody is thinking about being a reseller, keep in mind that you are being held legality issues to what your users put on the box.
It is your box.
Your server. You are buying it and you are releasing it to other people, but that box is under you, so... Yeah, if you get any notifications of people doing illegal activity, you gotta shut them down quick. If your provider doesn't shut you down and turn you in, I mean, I've been at work and I've seen FBI and Secret Service come into work to pick up hard drives for people that don't do what they're supposed to do.
There you go. So your liability, and that's also what you gotta look out for as a buyer of shared hosting. Try to go with larger companies that offer reselling. Try to go with big, well-known, widespread companies, because you're usually going to get better luck with them, because the smaller companies are resellers and their goal is to make as much profit as possible. So they're the ones that will gladly stick you on a box that already has 999 other people on it, and you're all fighting for that same one processor, that same 1 gig of memory. So it's generally slow. You're fighting with contention with everybody else on the server. And sure, theoretically, the majority of users aren't going to be pushing the machine hard for their basic stuff, but all it takes is one and the other 999 on that box get absolutely plastered in the scenario that you described earlier. One person took down the whole box, everybody's site went down.
Yeah.
So do your research and be careful when you go with resellers. So the next step, and now we're going to go into a little bit more detail about what you're getting and what your cost and hardware, software, and sort of, et cetera, is the next step up will be to get a dedicated server of your own. You can, in turn, become a reseller yourself if you want and share that kind of stuff out. But if you're hosting, if you're looking for a dedicated server, it's usually, and for people like us, and I think the listeners of our show, it's because they want it for their own reasons. Maybe their sites are so big or they need so much disk space or bandwidth that they can't find shared hosting within those parameters. You're not going to find shared hosting for $5 or $10 that's going to give you a terabyte of bandwidth. It's just not going to happen.
No.
But actually, that's a good. That's another thing to warn. There's a lot of places that say unlimited. Actually, a friend of mine, Donthra, who was on the show quite a while back, had a little segment on the show. She had some problems where she went over to the site and it said unlimited number of databases, and she went out there and started creating them, and it stopped her at 22. I don't know what the significance of that was. So she called and raised hell. How do you, you said it was unlimited. What the fuck, you know? They say unlimited because they know most people are never going to try to get 22 or more databases on there.
Was it a dedicated box?
No, this was a reselling situation, but the reseller said it was unlimited. Or they'll offer you unlimited bandwidth. It's one of two scenarios. Either one, it's not really unlimited. They've got an artificial limit in there that when you hit it, it'll shut down. Or B, it's throttled so that it goes so freaking slow that you'll never even be able to hit any kind of large bandwidth numbers anyway. So there's always gimmicks to everything. Always question that sort of stuff. And go into our forums at binrev.com and discuss some of your good and bad, experiences with different hosting companies. But anyway, back to dedicated server. Now, buying a dedicated server, actually, before we do into that, I guess I should say also related to that is co-location. And why don't you explain the difference between a dedicated box versus a co-located box?
Okay, when you get a dedicated box, you call up whatever provider or host or whatever you're going to go with, and they'll quote you a price, or if they already have what they call instant activation servers, say, okay, this server I want now, and then you order it. Bam, immediately they send you an email with the credentials that you need to log into the box. And you go ahead, log in. That is your box. I mean, you're the only one on there.
Thus the name, dedicated. It's dedicated to you. It's your dedicated server.
It's basically a server that you're leasing from them. However, a true colo box is, there's a host out there saying, okay, bring your box in. So you got your own server at your house. Put whatever hardware, whatever shit you need into it, right? You take it to this place. You sign up, basically what you're going to be paying for is power and data transfer.
Right.
Basically, you're using their power and their data transfer. That's what you want. That's what you're paying for.
That's pretty
you
much it.
You put your server in there. They never touch with it. They never go fuck with it. It's locked in a cage that you have a key to or a badge that you can swipe in and out, and you get access to your own box. And, yeah, you manage everything yourself, hardware, everything. That's completely yours. They're just providing you power and bandwidth. That's it.
And that's going to vary somewhat. Like, for example, some place, actually, I think most places will reboot your box for you as part of their service as a co-located box if you call and authorize them to. Some places do not keep it in a nice cage with a locked key. They stick it on a shelf somewhere. You know, that's going to vary. You get what you pay for when it comes to that situation. But it's the exact same thing. In both cases, it's a box dedicated to you. The only difference is the co-located one is your hardware. And a lot of us have lots of machines laying around. We don't want to go get one from a hosting company if we've already got one laying next to us. Or you might want to buy like an uber powerful high-end box and you're in charge of all your own hardware and you don't have to worry about upgrades and things like that, which we're going to talk about in a second. Well, the drawback to that, unfortunately, is that if something fails, if your hardware goes down, if your hard drive crashes, it's your hard drive in a co-located situation. You're the one that has to fix it. So you'll have to drive into in there to take care of your box and maintain it hardware-wise, whereas with the dedicated hosting that you get, you're basically leasing a box from them. And in most cases, again, make sure you read and make sure you ask questions about this up front, but in most cases, it's their system, it's their hardware, and if your hard drive fails, part of what you pay for is them replacing the hardware. So if the hard drive fails, they will replace it with a new one. They can't necessarily replace your data, you know, so make sure you have backups. Once again, we say that on the show, but they will replace hardware problems of any kind.
That's why you should have at the least weekly backups on your own home server.
Right. Well, whatever matches the data that you're doing with it. And I think you made a good point about this earlier. When you're picking stuff like this, you have to take into consideration, what are you going to use the box for?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, if you're a business, I mean, you're going to decide your business needs. Let's just take, for example, hard drives. If you've got a site that, you know, you're running your own personal site, you can just have, like, an IDE drive or whatever. That'd be fine. But if you're going to do, like, some really extensive database work, you may be best to go with four SCSIs on a RAID 5 or something like that. SCSI with like 10K or 15K speed hard drive. I mean, you got to take into like what hardware that you want in there to optimize for your business. Because I mean, say you got 20,000 people hitting your site daily, and your site is driven off a database. An IDE drive really, technically, really ain't gonna cut it. So I mean, you're gonna want something that is fast, can access the data quick, process it, and then spit it back at you. Which SCSIs is, as far as I know, SCSIs are the best for that. And you may want to do something like a RAID 5. So if one of the drives fails, you still have a backup, and everything is still running top speed. It's optimal.
And backup services is something else that's usually an additional cost when you're getting a dedicated server. You can usually add on a backup, like sometimes a SAN, a storage network, or off-site backups where they automatically run a script and they will back your server up for you for an extra $10 a month. They'll give you 40 gigs of storage for backups only on their special storage area network or something like that. So that's something they may offer you. Or you're going to have to come up with a solution of your own. So a RAID solution, backups to another box. Maybe you've got another box located somewhere else. Backing it up to your home computer if you have to, manually, whatever it takes.
Say your site or your business, whatever, isn't really processor or hard drive extensive. But you have a lot of users hitting you at once, you may want to go with like a load balance solution where like you got two servers basically acting as one and they share the bandwidth load.
Yeah, and we're talking probably too much detail though for, I mean, these are like high-end solutions, and if somebody's looking at that high-end, they're going to have to do their homework and research anyway. I think I'd rather focus, like our listeners are probably at the most looking at getting a dedicated server to host a site of theirs or to serve information or data off of. So I think we'd probably stay with just dedicated servers on down to the shared hosting, virtual hosting, that sort of thing. There are all kinds of options. I mean, that we could do a whole show on all the different things and discuss the pros and cons of why do this and do that. So let's kind of go into some of the hardware and talk about what's important in specifically a hosting environment. What's important to do hosting of a website, web servers, and not only web servers, but media servers, mail servers, all the other things that go along with that. Now, just to throw out a generic number, I have seen dedicated hosting as low as about $50 a month to anywhere as high as, well, thousands of dollars a month, literally, if you want some of the solutions that Booter was talking about earlier. But reasonably speaking, between $50, most common number is right around $100 to $200 range, and then sometimes some $300, $400, $500 range if you're getting a managed solution, which we're going to talk about later.
Yeah.
But within that range, let's talk about what you're going to be getting for your money hardware-wise. Now, that's going to be the biggest thing that's going to determine that price is the hardware that you're getting. Obviously, just like if you go down to Best Lie or whatever your local lying piece of shit electronics store near you is, just like anything else, the lower-end computers are cheaper than the higher-end computers. So you got to break down and determine, and again, like what Booter said too earlier, what are you going to be doing with this? So what's more important? Are you going to be doing like a lot of number crunching, mathematics, running a game server, things like that on it? Then you're probably going to want something with a faster processor.
And maybe you're going to want some dual processor, maybe dual core with it.
Sure. Dual processors, quad processors, dual core, quad processors, quad, dual core processors. Four.
Depending on the how end of a game, I would say anywhere 2 to 4 gigs, probably 4 gigs, would make it run smoother.
But if you're just serving up, for example, static HTML pages, and I want to kind of speed up a little bit here as we're running low on time. If we're going to serve up just plain old static HTML pages, not a whole lot of fanciness, or even some basic PHP, Perl, any of that kind of stuff, at the low end of that range for around $50, if you shop around, you can find some very low-end Celeron processors. You know, so 1.8 to 2.4 is the most common I see, Celeron 2.4s. Either sometimes they'll come with 512 or a gig of memory. And memory is important because it's going to, memory is going to determine how many users you're going to be able to handle on the system at any given time. That's when memory comes into play, because every single user hitting that site is going to open up a new process which needs a little bit more memory, and it starts to add up, especially depending on how CPU intensive it is, how long that process lasts, and how much memory it needs. And that basically comes back to what we were saying and prompted us to have to upgrade to a new box. We had too many users. You know,
yeah.
We were hitting 11,000 unique visits a day, which is a lot. So after probably 7,000 or 8,000 unique a day, which was a few months back, is when we really were already pushing our hardware to the limits, our memory to the limits. Mostly for us it was memory, because we're doing database queries, which can eat up some CPU time, but we're not crunching numbers, we're not pushing polygons and stuff like that. So it wasn't so much the processor, but more the memory. And not only the memory, but the hard drive space, and that I think is pretty self-explanatory. You've only got so much storage. So if you plan on opening a site like Booter's where you serve up all kinds of bestiality prawn, then...
Hey, I thought it was between us.
Okay, we'll edit that out later, too.
All right.
No, but seriously, though, prawn. I mean, honestly, those prawn sites, I'm telling you, those guys are using servers with tons of hard drive space, tons of bandwidth for obvious reasons, because everybody's looking for prawn on the interweb.
Hey, can I take a second to print my non-existent site yet? My whole idea about it?
Make it quick.
NotOurContent.com. It's basically a new thumb up to e-bombs. I plan on ripping videos, putting a strike through their watermark, adding my own, and reposting their videos with tons of ads.
Yeah, isn't that what e-bombs does?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that whole e-bombs world fight thing now, but yeah, I saw you make that little joke in IRC the other day.
Yeah.
All right, so quickly moving on, disk space is pretty much obvious, makes sense. So Again, going back to that $50 example, you can get a Celeron 2.0, 2.4, 512 megs of memory, which is enough to serve basic HTML, static pages, stuff like that, or some basic PHP. Drive space, if you're going to be hosting a lot of images, movies, videos, stuff like that, you're going to need bigger hard drive space. Otherwise, for those low-end servers, they might give you 20 gigs. That's a whole lot of text, which is all HTML is. So depending on what your needs are, you can get some very low-end stuff. And then the other thing that you'll see, and if you go out surfing on the interweb comparing hosting, you'll see there's four main things that are listed: processor, memory, drive space, and bandwidth.
Network usage.
That's right. How much bandwidth, how much network usage you get. And that's what these data centers are providing, and that's why a lot of these resellers come in. The first three things, all that hardware, I can go into Walmart and buy a crappy computer, but where am I going to get bandwidth from? Now, I can host it at home through my cable modem for a while until I get busted or shut down or whatever, but these giant data centers, and there's a lot of them in the state of Texas, there's a lot of them out in California, there's a lot of them, hell, there's a lot of them everywhere, frankly. But these big data centers, what they do is they work with the phone companies and lay these big pipes of bandwidth to connect to the global interweb. And then they're just like we described earlier of sharing, they're sectioning off a certain amount of that to each user, or excuse me, to each machine, I should say, it's a better way to say it. And that's how much bandwidth they have. So if you look at some of these, again, on the low end of that server, you might get a couple hundred megs of bandwidth. And we're not going to go into the math, but if you're sitting there at home and you're curious, it's very simple math. Sit down and think to yourself, well, I've got a 300 meg file, 300 megs for, say, an episode of Hack TV, for example. And if three people download that, let's say it's 333 megs to delete, and three people download that, there's a gig of your bandwidth just from three downloads of your video. So sit down and do your math. If it's a 15 meg MP3 file like Binary Revolution Radio, how many of those are you going to be able to download? You need to sit down and decide what your site, how many visitors do you have to the site, how many downloads do you expect, you know, and you're eventually going to outgrow it. And they do charge you. Be careful. Most of these will give you an allocated amount, but if you go over it, that's where they get you too. They will charge you extra for every, like, how much is it, for example? It varies at a lot of places, Booter, but if you go over your allotted bandwidth, there's a ballpark range.
Well, I mean, it kind of depends on what your business status is. Like, say you have, like, a whole bunch of service and you're paying this server company thousands upon thousands of dollars every month. They're going to give you a deal. They're going to, you know, they're going to bend their back a little bit and give you a deal for network overages. But I would say generally...
For normal people, like, you know, that just have the one server.
I would say maybe just a ballpark figure, $1.50 to $2. Per gig?
$2 per gig. So that's for each additional, to use our example, three more downloads of Hack TV above and beyond your allocated, you're paying $2 for. So every three people that download it, that adds up fast.
Yeah.
So you got to keep an eye on these sites, because if you get close to your bandwidth, you probably want to take it offline unless you want to get hit with a very big overage charge, an overage bill, which I'm sure some of our listeners, I know one in specific up there in New York, had a problem like that, so we won't drop any names there because I'm not sure if that's a sensitive subject or not. But anyway, we'll move on. So keep those kind of things in mind. And there's also, you know, it costs more. You can upgrade your bandwidth in blocks of 100, 200, whatever, or even go so high as what they call an unmetered connection, where they don't measure it anymore. You're limited only by what your hardware will allow. So if you've got a 10 megabit per second card, then you could max that out all month long, and there's no meter to limit you. So you could let that thing run at full download, full tear the whole month, and you're not going to get hit with overage charges. Your site's going to be pretty slow if you got that much download going on, but still. Now, we're kind of coming up on an hour now, I believe, so let's quickly jump through software. Again, this is something we could go into a lot of detail, but I want to keep this focused on things that are related to hosting your own website, your own server. What kind of things are very common? And first of all, well, let's start with the operating system, of course. And as hackers, we all love Linux and everything. And when it comes to hosting, hosting is no exception to that. Linux is the platform of choice, and I don't care, all you Windows people can write in all you want to. Windows certainly is an option. You can run Windows operating system for your hosting, but I'm sorry, it's just not as efficient. It has higher demands, hardware demands, and licensing fees. It's not a free operating system like Linux. So you have a lot of other things. So we're going to stay focused on Linux because Windows adds a whole other layer of mess on top of it.
So and basically, security too.
Well, and yeah, that's a whole that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
As far as Linux goes, I've used quite a few different flavors of Linux distributions on the multiple hosting that we've had over the years. I've never run into any problem with any of them. I'm not a distro whore. I don't get into the distro wars. One's as good as another when it comes to hosting. Now, yes, you can email in if you have some. I'd love to hear if somebody has some other evidence to the contrary. But for the most part, you're doing only a select limited number of things. So as long as you're supporting the hardware and the drivers and everything are there, most distros are going to do that. You're going to run a few different types of software. One thing you may or may not run, and if you've got a dedicated server, you probably are, that's a name server. You're going to run your own DNS. So if you're running your own name servers, you're going to be running bind for the most part, and you're going to have to go in there and set up your IP addresses and everything, which they give you at least one IP address when you get a dedicated server, sometimes more. So you're going to go in there and set up your own name servers, or you can just use your registrar's name servers. You can use anybody's name servers if you know someone else that has one, as long as it's going to route everybody to your box, to that IP address for whatever your site name is, it gets the job done. The other thing, and obviously this is the first thing that probably jumps in everyone's mind, is your web server, and of course we're talking about, for the most part, Apache. The dominant web server application out there, and for good reason. It's a really good server. Again, if you go with the Windows options, you have IIS, but once again, security comes into play, and efficiency comes into play, et cetera, et cetera. Apache is the way to go under Linux. There are other alternatives. I don't want to put any of the others down, but I'm just trying to keep with reality here. It is the most commonly used, and again, for good reason. Another thing you want to run, and of course, what Apache does or what a web server does, and I know I'm talking down to a lot of our listeners here, is that is just the application that serves up web pages. When somebody comes to visit your site, it knows where to find the information to simplify, knows where to find what page to serve up to whom, and displays that and sends that to that person's browser, that person's request for the page, so that they can view it on their computer machine. Well, then you have a mail server. One of the other big parts of the global interweb is interweb mail. So you're going to be running POP, XM, SMTP mail servers for incoming, outgoing mail. Again, these can be, and this is another thing, they'll limit you on the shared hosting because sometimes if you have a lot of email coming in or a lot of users checking email all the time, like say a university environment or something like that, that can add up quickly and be pretty CPU intensive. Along with mail, you might be running a spam filter of some kind. I didn't actually think about that until just now. I've got the hiccups. I almost thought that was going to be a vomit for a second there on the air, but it was just a hiccup. So I have the hiccups all of a sudden because I guess I'm trying to rush here. What else are you going to run? Database, some sort of database engine. Yeah, as much as I hate it, MySQL is the most predominant one, let's be honest. Postgres, another free option. But truthfully, you can run Oracle on Linux. Or, again, going back to Windows, you can run SQL Server. DB2, I mean, we could go into a list of databases and comparing them, but we're not going to. But suffice it to say, if you're running a LAMP-type system, you're running Linux. LAMP, of course, stands for Linux, Apache, MySQL, and our next thing on our list, which is PHP. Or some people would argue Perl. But PHP, Interpreter, Perl, CGI, whatever kind of language you're going to use to maybe manipulate data to and from the database we talked about earlier, those are the main things. And that's why an acronym was created for such a thing, LAMP, because that is such a common configuration for people. And again, you can mix and match the flavor of Linux. You can mix and match your database. I've set up LAP servers before, which was Linux, Apache, Postgres, and PHP. So, you know, you can vary for the most part, but that's going to be the most common thing that you find. Again, PHP is just the open source or the free, you know, the Linux equivalent. On Windows, you would be doing maybe ASP, ASPX, all this .NET, hujaba, jaba, 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 jaba. Spell that one. All this Windows overkill. Business environment, maybe it can do something different or better with it. But for I think, again, most of our listeners and what we want to do with it, quick, easy, fast, and efficient. You're going to go with some sort of lamp setup. And finally, under software, you probably will use, if you're in a shared environment, you're almost certainly going to use one. And even in a dedicated, you might want some sort of control panel software. Now, what are some, I know there's cPanel, there's Plesk is another one, right?
Yeah, I've used Plesk briefly. Personally, I like the Plesk GUI more than the cPanel one.
Well, it looks nicer.
More straightforward as far as where things are, how things go and stuff like that. Like I said, I haven't used cPanel that much at all before, but...
What does a control panel do for you? What's the point of it in general? I mean, what do they do? Why are there so many of them out there?
Well, it gives you more of a visualization of, you know, how to manage the server and stuff like that. So, yeah. Like, if people aren't that great with CLI and doing everything that way, this gives them, like, something to actually look at and kind of manage the server that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, majority of your everyday user, doesn't know the first thing about Linux. They don't know how to go out in there and add a user or where to put, how to configure Apache or where to put their files and on all this different stuff. They don't know the first thing about that. So what control panels do, and like there's NSUM, there's Plesk, there's cPanel, WHM, there's really dozens of them. There really are. All they do is they kind of automate a lot of that stuff for you. They give you a nice GUI. Generally, they're web interfaces. You log into a website through a certain port, secured, login, username, password, and it'll have all that. And there's a button that says, "Here, click here to create a new account." And it'll create the virtual host. It'll create the home directory. It'll create the DNS entries for it, the mail entries for it, set them up with all the directory structures intact, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It automates a lot of the process that most people don't know how to do on their own directly. Some of them are free. Some of them cost licensing fee for control panels. One of the things I didn't like about Plesk is it looked nice and pretty, but I found some of the stuff counterintuitive and where it was on the screens, and more to the point, I'll use Postgres as the example I ran into, it did not come with Postgres out of the box. You had to pay an additional licensing fee to get the scripts to install and manage Postgres easily through it.
Yeah.
So they want to charge you for licensing to get it in the first place, and then they want to nickel and dime you on top of that to add the Postgres GUI icons and stuff like that. So experiment with a few of them. We won't get into too many wars about those either, but they are certainly very handy. And even if you do know your way around Linux or Unix, or we'll stick with Linux, like I know my way around there a little bit, but you know what? It more than pays off in the time that it saves. Sure, even though I know how to add a user and I know where the home directory is and to put the directory structure and where to install things and where to set the pointers and all this kind of stuff and the logging, I know where it is, but the time it would take me to do all that or write a script to do a lot of it, it makes it so much easier for me and saves so much of my time that I can automate that whole process as well. And the only other thing to mention in software is we're really starting to run. We got another maybe 10, 15 minutes here. Actually, yeah, maybe 10 more minutes. The other thing I want to mention is that there are some software that, even though it's your dedicated server and you're controlling and maintaining it, there's still some software that the hosting company will not allow you to run. The most common is IRC. They won't let you run an IRC daemon, mostly because, it's constant ongoing bandwidth, constant connection, but really more so because there's so many bad things going through IRC in the form of botnets and things like that, that they just play it safe and say, no IRC under any circumstances, period. There's too many attacks that go through it. There's too many bots that run through it. There's too much, well, I won't say there's too much, but there's a possibility of illegal activity going through it because it's a little bit harder to track. There's just a lot of reasons that a hosting company may make that decision. And I would say even as high as 95%, maybe even higher percentage, do not allow IRC. Another large percentage of them, maybe almost as large, 90% or more, do not allow you to have any kind of streaming software because streaming media of any kind, streaming your music, A, you get into legality issues of streaming copywritten music, even if it's just to yourself, and B, it's constant ongoing bandwidth, especially if you're running, say, a radio station like we do where it's constantly have multiple listeners to it. It's constant bandwidth going out of your server as well. So even if you do stay within your limits, it's a constant pull on the bandwidth, and it may be affecting other people onto your same switch, your same networking equipment, could tax them as well if they're overselling what they've got there.
Yeah, I kind of mentioned this earlier, like when we talked about as far as like if you want to be a reseller, you know, like a host reseller or whatever, you got to watch what your users are doing. You know, I mean, you're held liable, and that's where kind of all this comes to with like illegal activity and
Well, and you have to support it.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to support them. I mean, if they call and they say, "Oh, I can't figure out how to create a mail account or something like that," you have to help and do all that kind of stuff, which is one of the reasons that we haven't been reselling any of our bandwidth or any of our, you know, we could do reselling on our dedicated server, but we don't because A, I'm not about making money on it, and B, I don't have the time to support it, and now C, we don't have the resources. We use that entire box and then some. So
yeah.
You have to support that stuff. So even now, the friends of, you know, we have friends in the community whose sites that we host and we support, for example, Zerl, but I told Zerl up front, hey, we'll host you for free, gladly. I love having the support. You know, you're my dog for years now. But don't call me at 4 a.m. because you can't figure out how to do this or that. So, but for the most part, the people that we have running their sites, we're hosting for them, know what they're talking about, know what they're doing anyway.
Yeah.
So for the most part, we're all good. But anyway, I digress. The only other thing worth mentioning here towards the end is management. And I kind of alluded to it earlier, so we don't have to spend too much time, but generally when you get a dedicated server, it's unmanaged, which means it's your dedicated server, and the prices are a little bit lower, but that's because you're doing everything yourself. If you fuck it up, you're fucked. If you screw the whole thing up, the most that you'll get them to do for you is wipe it and restore their image right back to the drive to get you where you started from. So if you didn't have your backup or whatever, it's all on you to handle it. And a control panel software will help and all that kind of stuff, but it's still a little bit bigger of a risk versus managed hosting, which is what we have switched to now. But managed hosting has some nuances to it as well. First of all, very, very common with managed hosting, you may not get root access to your own box. Sure, it's yours, it's dedicated to you, but when you get management, the majority of companies say, all right, we will manage your dedicated server for you, but leave it the fuck alone. We're not giving you root access to it because we don't want you to screw it up and then come to us to fix it all the time. So they usually will not give you root access on managed hosting. So you want to watch for somebody who does, which is something we were looking for as well. So, and that makes common sense. I think that's fair. I realize why they might do that. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that really screw stuff up and then expect them to work miracles with it sometimes.
Yeah, have them spend 6 hours on shit would, you know, they shouldn't be.
Right. And the other thing to keep in mind is some of them, as managed hosting, they will give you a limit to how many tickets you can open. It's not unlimited management. They will only give you 1, 5, 10 incidents per month. Sometimes there are unlimited ones, so usually they put that on there so you're not abusing it or asking them for every little thing, like please rename all of my HTML files to HTM, or I don't know, some stupid little, don't bug me with little stuff like that kind of stuff. So they'll put limits on how many tickets that they want to put out there. You want to look for one that's going to be unlimited. You may have to pay more, you may not, it all depends. And the other thing about managed hosting, some of them have very specific setups that they will manage for. Some places will only do management if you're using a particular control panel. They're only trained and they only know Plesk, for example. If you have Plesk on your server, or if you get a server from us and you want it hosted and managed by us, you have to use Plesk because, long and short of it, that's all we know. So if you have Plesk on it, yes, we'll manage it for you. If you don't have Plesk, we're not going to manage it for you. So look around and keep that in mind as well. And I guess somewhat related to this, usually you're getting hosting and management from that same company, but there are third-party companies out there, third-party management companies, that will take your existing unmanaged server that you're doing yourself, and you can pay them a monthly fee to manage your server for you. Now, these are a little bit tricky. You need to be very careful with, because sometimes these are some moron sitting in a shack who thinks he knows Linux really well.
And it's pricey, too.
Yeah, and is pimping himself out, claiming that he can maintain your box because he knows how to, you know, write a shell script to copy files or something like that. But really, they don't have any experience. They don't know what they're doing. You know, so be careful and do your research with these type of companies. They're hit and miss. find someone that has more than one, two, three people doing it so that you know you're not the only dealing with only one person who may or may not know what they're doing. Make sure they're not overextended. You know, do some searches for reviews on them and give it a shot. Well, and the last thing I'll mention here is the content. And again, I bring this up because we started off earlier saying hacker-friendly. Well, we're a hacking site, and of course the H word scares people a lot. They don't understand or know what hacking's about, and of course part of the revolution, or the main thrust of the revolution, is changing that mindset and changing the world of hacking to be something positive. Well, it's going to take a while. I think we're making some breakthroughs, but most places have content rules. One content rule that's almost universal: no spam. No spammers, no spamming, no mass mailing, however you want to word it. No spam, because that taxes resources and it gets them in trouble from law agencies, law threats from companies, just all kinds of stuff. Reputation, if nothing else. So that's almost universal. Also, the majority of places don't want to host your prawn either, because that provides legal issues for them as well. It may be your site, and you're kind of liable for it, but if you slip in some kitty prawn or something like that on there, intentionally or unintentionally, they can also be held liable and in trouble for that. So most of them, once again, make an across-the-board, no-prawn rule. And again, I mentioned earlier about hacking, most of them have that catch-all that says no, quote, illegal activities, no hacking of the system. Some of them even say no hacking allowed. Usually, you got to be very careful with this. When I was searching around, and every time I've ever gone to host BinRev, I've been very upfront with every hosting company and said, listen, here is our site. Go visit it. You're welcome to visit it. Ask questions. Here's what it's about. We do not do illegal activities. We don't condone illegal. I always tell people up front what the site is about and let them know what they're getting into and put them at ease that we don't allow certain things on there. So they know what they're getting into, and we don't have any blindside 2 months later going, OMGs, you're the hacking site, and shut us down out of the blue. So we always tell that up front. So be careful of what they will and will not allow, what they define as hacking or illegal activity. Some places don't mind that you have quote-unquote hacking content like ours, as long as you're not hosting cracks, hosting wares, again, the prawn, you're not running spam, you're not running a botnet, that sort of thing. So some places, I'll say, not all, not most, but some places they don't have a problem with hacking content just as long as it's not illegal. And again, I don't want to go into a rant on this, Booter, but I'm sure you can back me up that, you know, this is why we have rules in the forums and that we all enforce, is because that's one of those reasons. I'm not going to get shut down because somebody posts a crack in the forums or some wares in the forum or prawn in the forums. We have rules against those, and that's really the reason why. I'm not getting shut down over something stupid like that.
Yeah, I mean,
do we not? We get quite a bit of those posts, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, we've had to deal with this, like, almost on a weekly basis or whatever. And, we deal with it, and I think in a future episode that we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we may go into more detail about, but...
Well, we'll see. And, and you can also back me up that we've had several threats. No details now. Let's not drop too much here, but we have had several threats about content people have
posted in our top secret form, like emails from other specific people that, you know, we've had to remove certain things or not remove, but hide from the public eye.
Well, and in some cases, I've also stood up and said, no, we're not going to remove that.
Exactly.
You know, it depends on what they're requesting, too. I'm certainly not every email that comes in, I don't like this thread because of whatever. Well, fuck off and die. I don't care. You know, but if it is something that is blatantly illegal or blatantly a violation of our rules, then certainly, you know, we will do what the right thing is to do.
Yeah.
So, yes, it does happen. Do not think for 1 second that the BinRev forums is not a lot of work for our moderating team, and I hope everybody appreciates the work that they do, especially for all the bad-mouthing that they get because of it sometimes when, why did you close my thread, and why did you delete this post, and why can't we talk about this, and you moved my thread, OMG! There's reasons for a lot of this stuff. I am out of Kool-Aid, so I think that signifies that we're getting to the end of the show. And I think that is pretty much a good wrapping up point anyway. So, I'm out of Kool-Aid. I hope I'm not going to hurl here at the end of the show.
Well, that's okay. I just finished my last beer, too.
I made it an hour and 20 minutes without coughing up a lung. So, all right, we're going to get through this. How about some shouts? Why don't you go first with some shouts, Booter?
Well, shouts to you for having me on again.
Oh, well, thank you.
Or having me on, but the first time I didn't do it with you. But shouts to Droops, as always. Droops is fucking late.
And I'm sorry, I'll interrupt. Droops actually has some shouts he wanted me to forward to PyHack, PyHackNIRC. And Droops said that, but I'll give shouts to them as well, to all the IRC channels.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, big shouts to Poundman Riff. But, yeah, shouts to you, Black Ratchet. Strom, I talked to him the other day. Gave me some good advice. So.
Cool. And let's see, for me, I guess as long as we're in the IRC mode, I want to give shouts to BinRev UK, and not just the IRC channel, but in general, I am very proud at the representation we have in the United Kingdom. We actually have a pretty good group of supporters over there. So shouts to everyone listening in the UK, and specifically to my dog, Nick84. You know, it's just really... I gotta say, I'm so proud of Nick because he's a quiet guy. You know, he doesn't really get into a lot of the drama. He doesn't get tied up in all these other things. Nick is like the silent assassin. Nick, if you need something done, he is the man to go to. He and I spent this whole past weekend getting the server move done, and it really would have been so much harder without him. He's always there to help out with a lot of stuff, and I really just... couldn't give him bigger shouts. He's been a tremendous help and one of our greatest DDP members for the longest time. Nick and I have known each other for a long time now. We kind of were talking about the other day. We don't realize how long it's been since Nick and I have been working together on stuff. So big shouts to Nick84, everybody over in the UK. Our site of the week is... I don't know if I've ever used this one before, but it's folding.stanford.edu. That's F-O-L-D-I-N-G. Stanford, STANFORD.EDU. We stopped doing the distributed.net project a while back. We get it. We're not going to crack it. It's too fucking big. I think we've learned that lesson. So, moved on to a distributed project where I actually can see some progress being made, where it's still fun. The fun part is watching the progression as you go through it and watching everybody working together, and you can actually see the team growth of working together with people. With distributed, I mean, that thing's been running for years, and we haven't exhausted 0.3% of the key space or something. Okay, I think we have proven that it's pretty freaking secure. Okay? So I'm kind of lost interest in distributed net, so go to folding.stanford.edu. Client is pretty good. Documentation is there, RTFM. Just download it for the most part. Windows, there's a Linux client, but just download it, install it. Runs as a screensaver. All you have to do to configure it to join Team BinRev is, our team number is 47389. So in your configuration where it says team number, you will put in 4738 and 9. So anybody that wants to join that, or anybody that's still in the old distributed group, probably uninstall that and put on the folding at home. It's the same thing, a distributed number crunching, but the folding at home is protein folding. It's actually something productive and positive that actually can change the world. I mean, actually trying to find, searching through this, these proteins, folding this DNA, looking through there, I mean, it could actually result in something like a cure for cancer or a cure for other diseases, finding out how the human genome works, finding out, mapping out all this stuff. So it's actually got a positive effect on society as a whole, not just in hacking. So it's definitely a worthwhile cause. Email us if you have any feedback on the show at all. radio@binrev.com is our email address and should be up and working any day now, we hope. We're working on that. And again, I said earlier, we're not going to endorse any specific company for hosting on the show. We mentioned one or two only as examples. But if you guys have some good, bad experiences with some hosting companies, feel free to email us. Tell us who you like, dislike, and why. At least give us some reasoning behind it. Don't just say, you know, so-and-so sucks, I hate them, never use them. Give us some reasons, give us some examples. We're not going to slander and go out and bashing people, but if you've got experiences, we certainly would love to share them with everybody so we can tell them who to use and who not to use. So I know there's one in the forums that people talk about quite a bit, but I'll wait and see who emails in to say what. And our closing music this week is from this young lady, is MC Fanatical. Now, I kind of like just the word fanatical myself has kind of got a cooler ring to it, but MC Fanatical, this is a track called Mad Science. I don't have my, I'm out of iced tea, I'm out of my Kool-Aid, so I'm running dry here at the end of the show. Actually, I believe she either lives here in Orlando or did at some point. I might invite her to see if she wants to come to a BenRev meeting. So, if you're listening, like a chick would ever listen to this show, if you're actually listening, come on up, check out the BR407 meeting, third Friday of every month. But, until then, Booter, anything else before we close up the show?
Nothing that I can think of.
All right, so we will tell everybody that we will see them next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Science minded, I'm innovative by nature, but if I'm slipping through a ranch, you're gonna need a translator with a rambling monologue. I'll drop a cup on my thoughts, a scattering and shredder from the flaws of my creator. I got tools now, so I can rebuild me. No science comes with a guarantee. I remolded my brain like Sloan, and I replaced my heart with a metronome. I got a lavender, my parents' house like Dexter, where a hydrogen bonds on my beats like an ester. I'm a playmate, some rooms full of G&D and tubes, and I'm programming robots. It's all really cute.
That's not true.
Hey, I don't expect you to buy this, but what I do have for real is mad science.
Back off, man.
But my tool is a mic, and I engineer songs I don't know if I like. Cause I got a laboratory where I use technology and attempt to tell a story. I can mix up a potion to get your head shaking in perpetual motion. Cause I know the cliche, and I'll blow up the scene with my Tesla ray. Eureka! I just solved the verse, but I don't know if I programmed it well enough to work. My isolation converters are completely out of touch, but the world will want to hold in my musical clutch. Euphony! It doesn't have to be the same slightest story frame by conformity. Honest sex, drugs, or rock. Love, cash, or Glock. Like, do you think I care whose girlfriend you fuck? It's not new, but now I know how a dead horse would sound. That infection is spread to the underground. Call me crazy, but I want to hear some weird science. That's it. I want to hear some weird science. No, that's not a rap. That's a request.
Nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
But my tool is a mic, and I engineer rap. I don't know if I like. Cause I got a laboratory where I use technology and I attempt to tell a story. I can mix up a potion and get your head shaking in perpetual motion. Cause I know the cliche and I'll blow up the scene with my Tesla ray. Today I'm fearless cause I've embraced my own insanity. Love Marvel produced the common symptom of humanity. Before I came to terms, I gave the finger to Freud and turned my back to the future like Christopher Lloyd. No method, I was a ghost in the shell that poured from Lewis as my heart rate fell. When I woke up in hell, it was the same as before. And my blood so dark through my gore flaw before. Neither dead or alive, a zombie walks with a car driving reckless. When I got 5 stars, seems to me that each time I respawn on a little bitty bit of my sanity's gone. Regardless, my hold on life doesn't slip, which only weakens the hand of my reality grip. So add one part genius to social defiance mixed with alienation, and you got mad science. But my tool is a mic, and the engineer songs I don't know if I like. Cause I got a laboratory where I use technology and attempt to tell a story. I can mix up a potion to get your head shaking in perpetual motion. Cause I know the cliche, and I'll blow up the scene with my Tesla ray. No, I think people know about the Tesla death ray. I think people will follow. Nikola Tesla, he's a mad scientist. It was the death ray, what do you think it did? No, it never worked. Unfortunately.